Hi, welcome to Live Culture, a one-hour show of arts and culture discussion airing the last Saturday of every month. I'm your host, Martha Ouellette Lewis, and this month we are putting on our rose-colored glasses, and our theme is things that are appearing and emerging. It's an optimistic urban springtime viewpoint. Earlier we heard the theme from The Pink Panther, which is a 1963 film score by the great Henry Mancini, who had a birthday earlier this month. And I'm really delighted. My April guests are from two very different arts organizations, both doing wonderful work. One is Odetta Gallery in Bushwick, and the other is No Longer Empty, whose new exhibition project has just opened in the Old Bronx Courthouse. And my first guest is artist Ellen Hackle Fagan, who created and runs Odetta, which is a gallery in Bushwick, and whose next exhibit, Textual, opens later today. So we're really lucky to have her because I'm sure she's quite busy. Ellen, are you there? Hello? Okay. We're having a few technical difficulties. She's there. Ellen, are you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, is this Martha?
It is. Nice to talk to you, and I'm very glad that you were able to take time out of your schedule. Things must be quite busy there right now.
Yeah, I'm still working at the computer at home, getting the gallery book finalized, but yeah, it's busy.
Okay, so I wanted...
opening.
Yes, I know. You have the opening later on tonight for the show Textual, which we'll talk about in a minute. I wanted to talk first about just the gallery itself and your process in opening it. I wanted to mention that what Odetta looks like. It's this beautiful, very urban gallery with massive plate glass and sunlight and beautiful walls and floors, it's this perfect gallery in Bushwick, in the way that only a fellow artist could make it. And you are an artist yourself, so I'm curious about why you chose to run a gallery and not just continue your own art practice. What led you to do this?
Well, I love curating, and for me, putting shows together is an extension of my studio practice. It isn't that separate at
mm-hmm.
all. It's like making a larger painting about the types of things that I'm working on in my own imagery.
Mm-hmm.
I just look to the outside world to see, well, who else is dealing with an idea like this, and what does that look like? And that's what leads me to curating.
It
feels like a big painting, just a real big one.
That's a lovely way to think of it.
The gallery's made it even bigger.
Yes. And why Bushwick? Is it and has it been easy to segue into the art world there? I just want to say that you commute from Connecticut to Bushwick.
It's not a hard commute at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've been commuting from Connecticut for my studio in Harlem for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm used to the trip, and it's only like 45 minutes. It's nothing. Why Bushwick? I really feel that there's an audience there that is hungry for avant-garde art.
Mm-hmm.
And they come from all over the world, and they come in for brief moments just checking out New York, or they're there as artists for the last 20 years. And
mm-hmm.
studios fighting gentrification and trying to keep their studios going.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I like the combination in my life of an urban moment in time, and then being able to still access the woods
mm-hmm.
and birds and stuff like that. So I like mixing it up in that way, too.
I couldn't agree more. I shuttle back and forth, and I kind of like the change of scenery and having the option of two different kinds of worlds to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Has it changed your thinking about yourself as an artist, seeing yourself in a broader geographic context? I mean, I guess you've been doing this for a while, since you've already been commuting from Connecticut and going to Harlem. There's something about belonging to several art worlds at once that seems quite nice. Do you see yourself differently now that you're also a gallerist?
I think that people see me differently.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that I'm an artist anymore. The moment that you put a gallerist hat on, then they want to communicate with you about something different.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to keep both identities in their mind when we're talking to each other is one of the challenges. But I think every artist should run a gallery for 1 year.
I'm sure it would be eye-opening, I'm sure. So what would be the one thing or a couple of things that you think really you learned a lot about having done this?
I'm learning a lot about communicating better mm-hmm. with gallerists. So for an artist, I'm learning how to handle myself when it comes to dealing with a gallery. And I think that that's been very revealing and interesting. And I'm also learning how to be a gallerist and how to take better care of the business of art,
mm-hmm.
learning how to be responsible for that, because curation is one thing. Handling the books is another thing.
Yes.
Handling the facility is a third thing. So there's a lot of great learning curves taking place about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm very impressed by how well you seem to be doing it. You seem to be an excellent business person, which is something that I don't traditionally think of. Maybe this is a terrible stereotype, but think of most artists as being terribly good business people. But you seem to be very practical and grounded. And at the same time, what's lovely about your space is that you seem to be giving artists, you know, kind of, it's sort of a dream space, giving them what they would really want. So you produce beautiful postcards for every single show. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think my goal in the first year, I mean, as far as the business is concerned, if you looked at my books, you would think I'm a horrible business person. Running a gallery is a labor of love.
Yes.
Whether or not it becomes something that earns me a proper wage, that's down the road yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working on it. So the postcards are my inexpensive approach to giving an artist what I can afford to give them right now instead of a catalog.
Mm-hmm.
I think most artists, when they're applying for grants, do need some kind of a documentation of their exhibition history, so I'm trying to give them that.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, I want to just treat artists the way I would like to be treated by a gallery. That's my mantra right now.
Yes.
And I hope to sustain it over the five-year lease. I really am trying very hard to seek creative ways to earn income
mm-hmm.
so that I'm not doing some of the yucky things that artists are forced to do.
Right, right.
Different New York City venues in order to get seen in New York. So I'm not ready for those kinds of, you know, degrading moments. So
no, not yet.
I don't want to. I actually, I'd rather close my door than do it. So anyway, it's I like the artifact from a gallery show to have the artist have that, and I certainly don't do mailings anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. But other than that,
and you did
tonight. I'm assuming we'll have about 300 or more people there, each show has just been another terrific adventure in curating, getting to the artist studios, discussing their work with them, and then showing it to them
mm-hmm.
with a new pair of eyes is the icing on the cake. It really is.
So all of your events appear to be very, very well attended, the ones that I've been to at least. So I just want to identify the station for a minute. You are listening to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 on your FM dial and streaming online at WPKN.org. And this is Live Culture with Martha Willette Lewis, and I am in conversation with Ellen Hackel-Fagan, visual artist and director of Odetta Gallery in Bushwick. So Ellen, thanks again for talking with us. I know there's a lot going on. The current show is opening today, and it's called Textual, and it's a show that links textiles and language. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you have the artists Leonardo Benzon, Annette Cords, who is also up now at the Drawing Center, Alana Herzog, and Ken Weathersby. And it's running from April 24th to May 31st, so I urge people to possibly not get on the L train. There's some problems with the L train, but get over to Bushwick and get over to Odetta Gallery and see it for yourself. Can you talk about how you came up with this exhibit? Was it did you choose the artists first, or did you have an idea and then find artists for it? What was the process like?
Well, in my history of curating, I did a show called Art and Text. That showed at the Stanford Museum in 1995. And then I did a show in Harlem a few years ago, 2013, called Speaking in Tongues.
Mm-hmm.
Very interested in language. And Leonardo Benzant Facebook friended me when I opened Speaking in Tongues in Harlem, and mm-hmm. he said, "You should have picked me."
And you did, finally.
So, you know, I kind of thought, I like his beaded work very much, and it looks like digital, you know, binary code
mm-hmm.
with an African overlay, you know,
mm-hmm.
like Maasai tribe. So that's interesting. I don't see it as folk art or anything like that. I
mm-hmm.
saw it as very digital and contemporary, and it was speaking to me in a language. So,
wait a minute. So if people go onto the Odetta Gallery website, will they be able to see pictures of his work?
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's www.odettagallery.com.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
And the reception tonight is from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm. And so the press release that I read, it says, "Textiles and language evolved together. The first knot replicated the gesture of an embrace. That embrace repeated helped sustain life. We conveyed messages written and woven as our cultures developed, spread, and connected with others beyond our visual scope. Textual presents four artists who spin contemporary tales of diversity, technology, codes, structures, and the multiple layers of meaning packed within the spatial field." That's quite lovely. This seems like a very appropriate show to have for National Poetry Month as well. Were you thinking of that?
No, I wasn't. I'm not in that world as much as I would like to.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for telling me that. That's great. So May is National Poetry Month, or April?
April.
Okay.
April. So we're coming to the end of National Poetry Month. Okay. And you have the gallery for 5 years, as things are now, and you just recently were in your first art fair as well. What can you talk about the art fairs a little bit? I think that they're a little bit of a mystery to a lot of artists, and we'd all like to know a bit about how it works from your end of things.
Well, consider it a trade show. It is that. So there might be some kind of an overlay at the upper echelons with the blue chip galleries, where
mm-hmm.
you might have solo shows. But in general, we're bringing our galleries to the market,
mm-hmm.
and the market has now become a mall of sorts because collectors have started to steer us gallerists towards what they want to do when it comes to buying art,
mm-hmm.
and that is they'd like a one-stop shop, they'd like to compare and contrast all under one roof instead of hoofing it out to Bushwick, traveling for
right.
half a day, you know, finding
right.
your little secret location, which is what artists love.
Yes, so. No, that's exactly right. I think going to the special place is part of the fun, but you're probably correct. Collectors do not feel the same way.
And there's a lot of champagne and
mm-hmm.
pageantry associated with this. Apparently, I've never been to Miami.
Right.
And I hear it's just one big party.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to be seen there, and
mm-hmm.
they want to be seen buying art there.
Right.
You
were at Pulse, is that right?
I was at Pulse.
Yeah.
And it was quite a nice fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
Showed two artists. Everybody loved the booth, commented that it was really a well-curated booth, so I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a background in sales and had to do some trade shows when I worked for a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
My day job life. And, you know, I just fell back into that saddle again. It felt very comfortable for me dealing with customers and handling sales. So,
and did you have the artist doing it as well?
Yeah, we did. We did. Ryan Sarah Murphy and Margaret Rolicky were my two artists.
Fantastic.
They just got tons of publicity, visibility, and sales. It was good. And so I'm about to do Select Art Fair. They're doing a whole Brooklyn floor in the old Dia building in Chinatown.
When will that be happening?
That's happening just as my Flux Art Fair is happening, that I'm participating with my own work.
Wow.
All May 14th through the 17th.
Okay.
At the Freeze Art Fair out on Randall's Island.
So we can see you at Flux and
Select. Yeah.
And I have to say, I don't know Select. Is it new?
It's one of the newer fairs. Mm-hmm. It and Pulse are sort of equal in terms of how many years they've been working on developing their brand and their image. So Select is, again, they did this in Miami, curating a floor for Brooklyn galleries.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be nice because we're on the top floor, so you'll have to hoof it on up there to the fourth floor. But you
get a little exercise.
You get the dance lave and insulation the whole way up, which is gorgeous.
No, and that's then, very nice, yeah.
And then luckily for me, I'm the very first booth as you come up the steps.
So
get ready. It'll be nice.
No, it sounds fantastic. It sounds really fantastic. So one of the things...
There's no real mystery to the fairs.
Mm-hmm.
I think what galleries are trying to do is you know, leverage their artists with that commodity and try and find a price point and a visual statement that'll meet that sea of collectors that want to go just there to buy. And really then those collectors follow you back to your real gallery where you're really doing your curatorial work.
This brings me to something that you and I had talked about earlier, which I thought was really interesting, which is that you said that you felt like you wouldn't know whether going to an art fair as a gallerist was a success until about a year later, because things happen afterwards and there's a ripple effect.
Absolutely.
And so for you, the point is to actually get them to come to your gallery and start participating in the life of the gallery?
Correct. And also, just to know that I exist for some collectors, unless you're in that pool of fairs, they don't necessarily think that you're serious.
Right.
So there is some aspect for them that defines whether or not it's a serious commercial gallery. So I have to do it in order for them to want to even take a look at Odetta in some cases.
Well, I'm sure it does give you credibility in that sense. Yeah,
I have no problem being visible to artists of all levels of expertise. They all seem to love the gallery and want to get there and want to be shown in the gallery. I'm so excited by the artists, but cultivating the collector base is a different mentality. It's a different set of goals. So I'll have to learn how to tap into that.
So with that in mind, how are you going to be at two different art fairs at once? I assume
that... I sprouted foreheads.
Okay.
So I will start to divide cellularly.
Okay.
My little Prius, and I'm in the subways, and I'm gonna bounce around, and I'm gonna try and have the gallery covered. The gallery will be open too.
Kudos.
I've kind of checked it all out, and I wouldn't have done Select if I didn't think that it could be done. The Flux Art Fair does not require my presence
full
days every day, and the installation dates are off for each venue by one day. So it's going to be a busy week come May 11th, but I think it's all good.
I think you can do it. So Odetta opened for the Bushwick Open Studios, and the Open Studios are up last year.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So you've been open for a year and you've
almost
a year. And tonight is the opening for Textual. What time will that be again?
6 to 8 p.m.
And what is the subway that is closest to you?
Well, the L stop, the Morgan stop, you can look on the website and get some information on how to get here. You take the A train and do a transfer at Lorimer and get on the L there. So your L stop Morgan, or L train Morgan stop, is your best bet.
Okay. I'm only bringing this up because the Transit Authority has been doing strange things with the subway in that area, and it can make travel a little bit difficult. I urge everybody to look on the website at www.odettagallery.com and take a look at the artists being represented. Thank you so much, Ellen. It's great to talk to you, and I hope it goes swimmingly tonight.
Thank you, Martha. It's a pleasure to be on radio for the first time.
Well,
I really appreciate your interest in me and in the gallery, and I'm glad that we've met, and I hope you become a regular. How did your show go last night? Because you're an artist, too.
I am an artist, too, and my show went very well. Thank you. I had a show at a place called Plant House Gallery, and it was jammed, and it was delightfully not me organizing it. So it was very nice to just be there and meet people and talk to people. Anyway, thank you so much, Ellen, and we will talk later.
Okay. Bye, Martha.
Bye-bye. LDN by Lily Allen, a charming and pessimistic glass-half-empty song about London. You are listening to Live Culture with Martha Willette Lewis on WPKN.org, 89.5 FM. And stay tuned. After Me is an Earth Day special being celebrated today in Newtown and broadcasting live from there. Next up, I'm speaking with Marcus Gallen-Mitchell, curator of programs at No Longer Empty, and Regine Basha, curator of No Longer Empties exhibit, When You Cut Into the Present, the Future Leaks Out, which inhabits the long-abandoned Old Bronx Borough Courthouse. This ambitious exhibition occupies three floors and includes the work of 26 artists and site-specific works. And as the press release says, When You Cut Into the Present, the Future Leaks Out echoes approaches attributed to cut-up poetry, early hip-hop, spoken word, and the sculptural practice of artist Gordon Mata Clark, who sliced into urban spaces as social commentary. Hi, Regine, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you? Can you hear me? Hello, Martha?
Hi, are you there?
Hi, yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, good, okay. We're just having a few technical difficulties, and I understand we don't have Marcus on the phone, so I'm going to talk to you for a few minutes before.
Okay, no problem.
So I'm so excited about your exhibit, which I went to the press event on Thursday before it officially opened, and this is an enormous undertaking, putting this together.
Yes, it was. Indeed.
Can you talk a little bit about the process that went into it?
Sure. You know, I like to joke that it was a little closer to a film shoot or a theater kind of, or an impromptu play than installing an art exhibit. For me, this felt very different because, you know, here we were coming into a space that was still in the process of being you know, kind of fixed up. I mean, it's not undergoing renovation per se, but they were certainly making it safe for the public.
It's so just for the, for people who haven't been there, I just wanted to give a little bit of background. When you walk up to it, it's an enormous Beaux-Arts building that's covered in netting and scaffolding. And
exactly. Clearly a construction site.
Very much so. And the upper floors are currently under construction.
We have no access to the upper floors, of which there are many, but there is plenty to see on the lower level, on the ground floor, and the first floor, which is where the art is installed.
It's a little bit like a labyrinth. You can sort of wander around and discover the work for yourself, which is something that I really like about it.
It's a fascinating building because, well, first of all, the interior of its former, you know, history of the courthouse is more or less been stripped. I mean, the lobby is still intact, so there's a lot of marble and there's a lot of grand staircase, you know, and details that are breathtaking. But then as you go in, each room is so different. And I think it took us about, gosh, I would say a month just to get used to where all the rooms were and discovering all the little pockets and corners and nooks and surprise rooms. I mean, it just kept going on and on. And it really did take us about a month just to get to know the building.
And at that time, was there electricity in the building? And one of the questions I had were the artists actually physically making the work in the building before the exhibit?
Not entirely.
Okay.
So to answer your first question, there was electricity, but no heat.
So no heat, nice.
Very cold winter, and that building's at least 10 degrees colder, so, you know, it felt like working outside, really. But no, the artists, for the most part, just visited many times and made work in response to it. Now, there are a few artists, like Paco Cao, for instance, from the Bronx, who chose to work with the building as a character and stay and, you know, really create work from the experience of being in the building.
Can you describe that work a little bit since we're on radio?
Sure. It's a film that he made about, it's a very kind of surrealist film, I call it. He worked with the Ghetto Film School, became partners in making the film. And it pertains to the idea of Lady Justice, who graces the top of the building. Eventually the scaffolding will come up, so we will see the facade. And his take on Lady Justice is that she has always been portrayed as this white kind of patriarchal figure, you know, from Greek classicalism. So he was reinterpreting her possible role in current modern day society in the Bronx as being ethnic, as being, you know, a little bit more taboo, perhaps even. So he's taking the figure of Lady Justice, and it almost goes through this dream sequence It's a very provocative film.
Mm-hmm. And how many... I'm wondering, the courthouse has such a strong presence. How many of the artists in the show, or how important was it to you that the artists in the show were, in fact, reacting to ideas of justice or the courthouse itself, the function of the building?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we grappled with that at the beginning, and I felt that that could have been, a singular theme for
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
where every work has a relationship to social justice, civil liberties, and freedom of speech. And there's plenty. I think had I had a year, we only had 3 months.
You did this all in 3 months?
Yes. There's certainly something to be said for creating that kind of show, whether mm-hmm. in a courthouse or out of a courthouse. But the challenges of working with a sort of magnanimous space like that is that you also have this real physical experience in the building because of the architecture and because of perhaps the nature of the space being cut up.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, I wanted to leave it up to the artists,
good,
slightly open, more open-ended,
right.
So that yes, there obviously would be artists responding to the role of the building
mm-hmm.
And the history as well as the present circumstances of social justice,
mm-hmm.
But not entirely. So some of the artists really just took on the role of highlighting characteristics within the building that might be much more sensorial.
Right.
And I think these play off of each other quite well. As a curator, I often believe that I go from the figurative to the abstract, to the narrative,
mm-hmm.
To the... it's for me that... that enables a visitor to almost take a break
mm-hmm.
From a lot of reading or a lot of the same kind of work and,
yes.
and just then experience something so abstract that then they might actually be able to make connections better
mm-hmm.
Between the rooms.
I understand
so
that we have
a choreography with that.
I understand that we now have Marcus on the line. Marcus, are you there?
Good. Yes, I am.
Hi. Oh, fantastic. Okay. Regine, when you cut into the present, The Future Leaks Out is a really fantastic and very evocative title.
Thank you.
Where did that come from? What is the origin of that?
I was reading about, I was reading about another artist's work, and the writer quoted William S. Burroughs,
mm-hmm.
Who you may know is,
yes.
a beat poet
mm-hmm.
from the 50s, and that particular line came from his discussion on cut-up poetry,
mm-hmm.
Cutting up words and reshuffling them to create new meaning,
mm-hmm.
kind of almost even in a alchemic way to create kind of
mm-hmm.
new meaning, new possibilities. And I was just interested in how we are still doing that. I mean, technologically, we do that with cut and paste.
Mm-hmm.
But, we live in this society where that is very much understood. History is cut up, everything. So this building itself was physically cut up, and
mm-hmm.
it felt like it spoke perfectly to.
Well, and also, there's and a more pop note. There's those fridge magnets that are the separate words that you
yes.
rearrange, sort of
That's
poetry
right.
sets, which are sort of endlessly fun. So with the poetry and spoken word aspect in mind, I have a clip here from Angel Navarez and Valerie mm-hmm. Tavere. And I just before we play that clip, I'm hoping that you could give us a little bit of background on Angel and Valerie's piece. And
sure.
the clip that we're going to be hearing is Lynn Saunders, a.k.a. Lady L, and Anna Rockefeller Garcia. And maybe you could talk about who they are just a little bit before we play the clip.
Sure. Well, just a little bit about Angel Navarez and
mm-hmm.
Valerie Tavere.
Yes.
I've worked with them several times now, and they're a collaborative team that work with transmission. So
mm-hmm.
that means radio, that means music in general, the meaning behind certain genres of music or lyrics. They do karaoke projects
mm-hmm.
Where political karaoke projects.
Well, and a disclaimer here, I curated an exhibit which is up at ArtSpace New Haven right now called Vertical Reach, and Angel and Valerie are part of that. So,
fantastic.
Disclaimer there.
Fantastic. Yeah, they're great. And what I like about their work is they connect to pop culture as
mm-hmm.
well, so a lot of people can gain entry into
mm-hmm.
what they do, and they just create another layer of meaning
mm-hmm.
for that. So, They were invited, and they immediately became interested in Bronx music history, hip-hop,
mm-hmm.
as well. And through collaborations with Casita Maria, which is a cultural organization mm-hmm. in the Bronx, they arrived at the invitation they basically learned more,
mm-hmm.
Which was great, because Casita Maria really kind of updated our knowledge and mm-hmm. of who's where and what people are doing
Lynn Saunders Lynn, and Lady L and Anna Rockefeller Garcia, are they part of that?
Yeah, Lynn, Lady L, I'll call her, mm-hmm. was at the time, in the early days of hip-hop, she was one of the first female rap artists.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, was very pivotal in with the continuity of the material and has mm-hmm. kept all the ephemera. And, you know, so she actually teaches, I think, preschool mm-hmm. at Casita Maria now.
Okay.
You know, she has grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
So we met her, and it was just this, you know, moment of
mm-hmm.
Recognition of who we are actually meeting. It was great. She's still active, and, you know, Rockefeller is one of the first female breakdancers.
Okay.
Same generation.
And so
working with them, yeah,
right.
they kind of crafted the project, the spoken word project with them, with lyrics from the era.
Okay, so Angel and Valerie were responsible for the lyrics.
Well, they basically reshuffled many of the lyrics
okay.
that came out of early hip-hop, working with Lady L and Rockefeller.
Lovely.
They came up with a new script. So Rockefeller actually speaks the script in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
While Lady L speaks it in English.
And oh, so it's simulcast.
Installed.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's simulcast.
Simulcast?
It's simultaneously in two languages at once, which is quite lovely.
It's kind of a banter.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, one says a phrase, the other says a phrase back.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like a conversation, but
it's
they're not
a call
exactly
and response.
Having a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, with that in mind, let's play the clip.
Great.
You know what? I want to tell you a little something about us. I know a few understand what I'm talking about.
Tú sabes. Tenga en cuenta. I've been out there from back in the days.
I heard a sound.
Escuché un sonido.
Now then, you know what I mean. So let your ears hear what your mind can't conceive.
Escuche lo que estoy diciendo. I'm going to break it down para que mires.
Don't push me, because I'm close to the edge. See, I don't know exactly what you know. I like to talk about fact, not fiction.
Okay. Fact, not fiction. Well, that was tantalizing. So, and leaves me with more questions than answers. And I want to bring Marcus in here because Marcus is the curator for No Longer Empty, which is the umbrella organization that arranged for the building and put you, Regine, in the building in the first place. Is that correct? Do I have the order of things right? Marcus, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can. Welcome. Right. Thank you for being with us. So you're curator of programs at No Longer Empty. And whose idea was it to use the courthouse? Was it Regine? Was it you? How did this happen?
I actually believe it was an opportunity that was presented to the organization
mm-hmm.
Through a relationship with Menel Sloan and the owner of the building. No Longer Empty had been in the Bronx and it had a very successful show at the Andrew Freeman Home
mm-hmm.
And is also part of the Bronx Arts Alliance. So
okay.
that relationship was kind of facilitated this special opportunity.
Oh, fantastic.
To work,
okay.
yeah.
And so are you going to be doing other projects specifically in the Bronx, or what's happening after this? This is up for quite a while. This is up until mid-July, is that right?
Right. This is up through July 19th,
mm-hmm.
Every Thursday through Sunday from 1 to 7.
Okay.
And as for what's coming next, there are a few different opportunities that we're still negotiating,
mm-hmm.
none that are confirmed, but we may be doing a project in East New York and Brooklyn. We most likely will be coming back to the Bronx because we have such great relationships with so many
mm-hmm.
Different community stakeholders and organizations.
Right.
But as of now, we're, you know, it's all hands on deck for the courthouse show. So
absolutely. No, this is an enormous undertaking. I'm so impressed that you guys did this in 3 months.
Thank you.
That seems impossible. So the reason I wanted to bring you in for the Angel Navarez and Valerie Tavere clip is to ask, you're doing all of the events programming for the exhibit, is that right?
Correct, yes.
And is there specific spoken word events that are going to be taking place from now until July?
Well, we have a range of different events that are happening with community partners, ranging from arts and cultural organizations to civic organizations and educational organizations. And the exciting thing about this project that refers to the concept of when you cut into the present, the future leaks out, is that opening up the building for the first time in nearly 40 years is really also a great opportunity to let different organizations back in and kind of actively program and reimagine collectively what this building could be in the future. So I say that to say a lot of the programming is still in development, and as we meet new people and are introduced to new artists and initiatives in the community, it's kind of a steady accrual. Almost an archive of this really special opportunity. But we do have certain programs that are scheduled that we're really excited about. I can go through some of them if you like, or we can continue depending on how you'd like to.
Well, just tell me one or two of them. I like the idea that they're going to be doing things in a kind of impromptu way or by seeing what the community has to say and to offer. I think that's a really nice way of doing it.
Thank you. So maybe I can just quickly talk about two programs.
Yeah, just talk about two programs. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
And people can find out more on the website, I assume.
Yes, on our website, www.nolongerempty.org.
Good.
And if you visit our events page, you'll find the schedules and descriptions.
Terrific.
And you'll also be able to RSVP for the event.
Okay, and is that important, do you think, RSVPing?
It's helpful for us just to anticipate, the numbers of people who are coming out, but certainly just for getting basic information, we definitely recommend looking on our website.
All right, so why don't you tell us about a couple of events that you think are particularly interesting? That would be nice to know.
Cool. Thanks. So one that I'm really excited about, we're working with the New York Public Library with their Community Oral History Project, which is a citywide project, much like StoryCorps, where they actually recruit interviewers from the communities they work in, train them to conduct oral histories, but the interviewers actually nominate their own candidates to, tell their stories about a particular neighborhood, and the library actually archives these by neighborhood throughout the city.
And
we're working with them to do,
What will the archive? What does the archive look like?
It's an archive of photographic portraits of the interview subject.
Okay.
And their audio files that typically last from 30 to 40 minutes.
And anyone can access this? You can just go into the library and ask to see it?
Yes. Once it's archived in the library, there's actually a collection. It's part of the New York Public Library collection, and you actually, like any other archived audio file, you'd go into the library, go into their system, and you'd be able to identify it by the name of the archive. And for this one, we're creating a, it's really exciting, we're creating an archive for the courthouse itself, for people who lived and worked in the community and also in the courthouse. And we're working with the local Melrose branch, New York Public Library. So it'll be the Old Bronxville Courthouse in Melrose Region Community Archive with the New York Public Library.
That's great.
On the 14th, on May 14th, we're having a kickoff event where the manager of this program, Alexandra Kelly, is going to interview two subjects, which will kind of kick off the entire initiative, which will run through the 3 months of the exhibition. And we'll actually be conducting oral histories on site.
Oh, nice. Nice. So people can come and
really
participate.
Yeah, so we have confirmed, we have a former assistant district attorney who actually worked in the courthouse when he was active to come back. His name is Anthony Shepard, and he'll be offering his memories of actually working in the building. So we're really excited about that, and working to get other community members we're really excited about who grew up in the community, different relationships to the building. And from there, we're going to recruit people who are interested in, interviewing their grandmother or their neighbor, or their teacher. So we're also working with local high schools
This is a very rich project. It could turn into something huge, it seems. I just want to give a station ID. This is Martha Ouellette Lewis, and you're listening to Live Culture on WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5, and online at WPKN.org. And I'm in discussion with Marcus Gallen Mitchell from No Longer Empty and Regine Basha, who is the curator of their current exhibit, When You Cut Into the Present, the Future Leaks Out, which offers a rare glimpse into the Old Bronx Courthouse and also has a stunning array. There's 26 artists, is that right, exhibiting and three floors.
That's correct.
That's correct. Yeah, so Regine, I'm hoping that you can talk a little bit more about the various artists and pieces in the show and kind of tempt people to make their way over. It's not certainly easy enough to get there, and it's quite beautiful and springy. Out very green in the Bronx right now, so
yes. We joke that by July it's going to be so hot outside, and the building will be the coolest place in the city.
It will, and I, you know, my favorite part had to be going down into the basement, which had a really intriguing selection of pieces, including some sound work, and some video pieces. So if you could just pick a couple of things and talk about them, that would be really lovely.
Yeah, some insights. The basement has its, seems to have been developing its own kind of atmosphere, let's say. As we were observing people at the opening taking refuge in the basement. There's an array of work that, I mean, each very different, but Abigail DeVille is probably the first major installation that you come across in the basement, and she, having grown up in the Bronx, creates work in very highly dense and immersive installations that involve objects, found objects, you know, old lo-fi electronics. There's some tree parts. I mean, I'm not going to go into it to detail, but let's just say that it's a kind of a reenactment in a way of her, like, regurgitated memory of the Bronx and her childhood, you know, as it was mostly burned out vacant lots. So it's grim, but it's also like a kind of phantasmagoria. You look into it and you find all of these details. It's a way of storytelling, really.
It does have a kind of fairy tale quality to it. It's kind of dark and beautiful
at
the same time.
Too, mm-hmm. sort of Alice in Wonderland. It's kind of the parallel reality part of the building. And then a couple of next to that, there's a sound room. We're calling it the sound room. It's Daniel Newman and Juan Betancourt, artists who have collaborated to create an environment in which sculptural speakers are hung in, you know, from top to bottom and bounce off these different sounds that come from their inhabiting the building for a while. So
that was an amazing one. That was an amazing one. I like that one. And I also like the fact that you have to climb through this tiny door to get there.
Yes.
So there's like a half size door. Yes.
We don't know what that door was used for, but you do have to bow down, you know, in a ceremonial way to enter it. And yes, it's actually very calm in there, despite the fact that it is kind of the belly of the beast. And then there's also a video, as you mentioned, Michelle Lopez, who has another work in the show that is a glass piece that is sort of burnt glass. She deals with, in this particular video, it's her first time making video. It's fantastic. She deals with this moment that we all know very well. It's like a phenomenon where a bird passes into a glass window. And through her research, of course, she learns that they are, in fact, attacking their own image because they think that it's an aggressor. An ornithologist works with her on this. I never knew that myself, in fact. But so it's this phenomena of just trying to get out. It looks as though they are trapped and trying to get out of or into a place. So it's a very jarring, it's a very simple piece, but it just really hits you at the core.
Well, and also, since it's down in the basement and you know it's down in the basement, and yet it's projecting this kind of window, this artificial window.
Those windows have been, with concrete. So that's part of what I was talking about with these. Some of the works just create the feeling, you know, of being trapped or those kinds of issues that come through in more emotive or sensorial ways. Same thing with David Scannavino, who's at the other end of the basement, who's created this linoleum tile kind of wall-to-floor sculpture that, again, looks like the floor is sort of coming up right at you. It's almost like a virtual reality zone.
Yeah, that had a very Alice in Wonderland quality to
its own effect.
So I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut us off. We're running out of time here. I want to thank you both so much, and I feel like we've only hit like the tiniest amount about the show.
So much more.
I know there is so much more, but it is also I really want to stress it's really worth going out to see this, and it's up until July 19th. And people can find more at www.nolongerempty.org. And my guests have been Marcus Gallen Mitchell from No Longer Empty and Regine Basha, who is the curator of their current show, When You Cut Into the Present, The Future Leaks Out, which is at the Old Bronx Courthouse, which I highly recommend people going to see. It's an optimistic thing to have happening this spring. Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you so much for saying, Martha.
And I will be seeing you at the courthouse. Bye-bye.
Summer journeys to Niagara and to other places aggravate all our cares. We'll save our fares. I've a cozy little...
Hi, this has been Martha Willett-Lewis, and you have been listening to Live Culture on WPKN. And join us again next month, the final Saturday of the month from 11 until noon. And I look forward to visiting with you then. And meanwhile, we're going to be having a live broadcast for the Earth Day celebration at Newtown coming up next. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Out in Huntington, Long Island, featuring the English Beat, on April 30th. The Paramount is accessible via the ferry from Bridgeport and the Long Island Railroad's Huntington Station. Tickets available through Ticketmaster and the Paramount box office. More information at ParamountNY.com.
Hey, it's that time again. WPKN's fourth annual Bluegrass and Roots Benefit Concert is happening at the Acoustic in Bridgeport on Thursday, May 7th, with Connecticut's own Five in the Chamber, Lisa Furman and Friends, and Goodnight Blue Moon.
Into the port called Dragon Sail, the gallant ship one day.
Join WPKN at the Acoustic, 2926 Fairfield Avenue in Bridgeport. Doors open at 7 p.m. The show is at 8. Tickets at the door are $15.
I said the pilot, I've looked and looked again.
Sponsorship support provided by Guitar Connecticut Productions, Housing Development Fund, Bodunk Bluegrass Festival, AcousticMusic.org, Connecticut Folk, Bridgeport Child Advocacy Coalition, Cohen, Kaufman & Associates, LLC, and Operation Hope of Fairfield. That's WPKN's Bluegrass Roots Benefit, May 7th, at the Acoustic in Bridgeport.
Must have been we wandered, we ain't never been here before.
It's an emotional experience when I have to retire my old car. After all the places we've been together, it's sad to send it to the boneyard or sell it to a stranger. That's why I donated my last car to WPKN via the link at WPKN.org. It was easy, and the money the station got was more than I could have comfortably given as a cash donation. I got a generous tax deduction, which lowered what I owed to the IRS. Those things made me feel good, turning what could have been a sad parting with my old Mazda into a cause for celebration. If it's time to let go of your old car, or even your boat, plane, or RV, you can feel good about it too. Click on the car key icon at WPKN.org and follow the simple instructions, or call 877-WPKN-CAR. It's easy, efficient, and you'll quickly receive the form you need for your tax deduction.
Did you know that you can take WPKN with you wherever you go? WPKN now has both Apple and Android apps for your mobile devices. Both are free, and the easiest way to get them is to go to our WPKN homepage at wpkn.org. and click on the links that will take you to the App Store or Google Play.
RVNA, based in Ridgefield, Connecticut, has a three-part mission. First is to provide health care at home to people across a 27-town geographic area. We have over 120 staff members, most of whom are caregivers, who travel to our patients across these towns to provide health care services in the home setting. The second part of our mission is to provide community health and wellness programs, such as health education, vaccines, health screenings, clinics, and of course, health fair. Health fair is one of the more popular and heavily attended programs, as we offer over 500 different medical screenings, tools, and assessments free of charge to the public. And the third part of our mission is rooted in public health. RVNA is the public health nursing arm for the town of Ridgefield. In the event of power outages, public emergencies, and/or communicable disease, RVNA is called in to provide medical supervision and health care services for the Emergency Operations Management Team.